You are Locked On Washington Football Team, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Washington Football with your host of the Locked On Washington Football Team podcast, Dave Harrison, Chris Russell. Find Chris over on Twitter at RussellMania621 and at the Team 980 and 106.7, The Fan in Washington, D.C. And then also find Chris covering your Washington Football Team for Sports Illustrated in written form. You can find me, David Harrison, on Twitter at DHarrison82, also covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for the Locked On Podcast Network at the Locked On Bucks Podcast, or over at SB Nation at BucksNation.com, covering the Bucks as well. And then you can find the show at Locked WFT Pod. Chris, another day, another batch of news. I mean, like you said it many times on the show before I ever even joined the show. I remember listening to you. You said there's never a dull moment. There's never a day that goes by where we don't have something interesting to talk about with the Washington Football Team. And this one is an interesting topic, but also I got to give you some due credit because you kind of called this as Amazon. You know, he's stepping down. He is in the process of stepping down. Right. But Jeff Bezos of Amazon is now being reported as on the verge, quote unquote, of buying the Washington Football Team.
Yeah. You know, like you said, there's never a dull day around here. It's very rare. And David, I would just say this. A couple of weeks ago, I think it was like right around February 1st, you know, give or take a couple of days, you know, a day or two, I just kind of like had this sense that, you know, that Bezos was poking around and, you know, the NFL is trying to deal right now with the Dan Snyder Washington Football Team mess. And that's quite honestly what it still is, even though it got better on the field this year, even though the front office seems to have sorted itself out, even though President Jason Wright is involved here. We know we have a very messy ownership situation involving the three minority main owners that own about 40% combined of the team. Dan Snyder only owns himself just over 40%, and his family, his mom and his sister own the remaining, I think it's like 19.5%. So that's how you get basically to 100%, even though Dan Snyder, you know, only owns himself a little over 40%, he's got full controlling voting powers and privileges. So the question becomes with Jeff Bezos, a guy who, you know, obviously built Amazon into a global empire and is the richest man in the world, or was the richest man in the world, whatever, is would he want to be involved in a messy franchise that maybe he doesn't have complete control of, and that he doesn't have full voting power and privilege and decision-making authority?
Yeah.
And that's something that I'm going to turn around to you and ask you to guesstimate, because I don't know what else, what other way we could do this. Is if, say, Jeff Bezos bought the 40% remaining share of the three minority owners, and say Dan Snyder retained majority control through his family and through the current arrangement, which again gives him the right and full voting power and privilege. Mm. Do you think that's something that a guy like Bezos would be interested in? And more importantly, do you think that would help the Washington Football Team in any sort of way?
I mean, I have to feel like, you know, the opportunity to potentially buy into an NFL franchise is going to be an attractive option for really anybody that enjoys the sport, enjoys the business that is football and is connected to the area. And Jeff, I think obviously if these words are coming, they're not just coming out of nowhere. You know what I mean? They're coming from somewhere of interest. And so if he meets the criteria that we already know, he meets the criteria of being interested in the area. He owns a house in the area. Amazon opened a new headquarters in the area. So, I mean, all those ties are there. So the dots connect themselves in that aspect. I think that what Jeff kind of has going for him is if he can get to a position where he and Dan even have, you know, individually the same amount of control. And I understand that through his family, Dan would still have more control. But if Jeff could get to a place where they're at least even as individuals, then you kind of have the sense where Dan would almost be forced. And I don't know, you know, if this would work behind the curtain that, you know, nobody sees of the National Football League amongst the other owners and the commissioner and all this other stuff. But basically, Jeff would kind of come in into a situation saying, I'm the new blood in this situation. Now there's not three other minority owners that you're dealing with. It's just me and you. And yeah, you might have, you know, your family stock in the team that kind of backs you ultimately at the end of the day. But the sense I think coming into the relationship would be that I'm here to help you turn this around because the direction you have it going is not a good one. Mm-hmm. And Dan, he, for everything that he is or might be, right, he's not stupid. And that, and that's the thing that I think is lost on a lot of people from the court of public opinion is he's not a stupid individual. He may have done some stupid things or taken some stupid steps, granted, but this isn't a person who doesn't understand how businesses build, thrive, and survive. And he's got to understand that when a face like Jeff's comes in and someone who's as successful as he has been, has the know-how, has the experience, and has a little bit of the pull from a social perspective, he's got to go ahead and listen to him at least to a certain extent, and then they kind of work out the details there. I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't some sort of mechanism built into their agreement for Jeff to go ahead and eventually assume more control than Dan, essentially letting Dan stay in the organization, continue to call himself an NFL owner while becoming more a figurehead, just kind of the more known face of the team than the actual operational side.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think you make some really good points. I mean, a lot can happen here. I mean, first of all, we don't know if we found out about this through Front Office Sports and through court documents filed in India, which is a part of course, the continuing battle and the legal battle between Dan Snyder and the three minority owners, that again, Jeff Bezos' lawyer and the lawyer and the company that represents the three minority owners and therefore the 40% stake have spoken. We don't know how serious, we don't know how legitimate that is. We're just trying to kind of connect the dots here in that, again, they've spoke. We assume it's about that 40% stake, but we don't know. And that could change based on, like you said, a negotiation and also what it could change. And quite honestly, this is where I'm kind of wondering is what if the NFL is about ready to, you know, reveal the contents of the investigation that again, they took over and they sanctioned, right? Yeah. What if they know like the contents of that right now? And what if they're preparing to either try and oust Dan Snyder, which I don't think they will do, or what if they're trying to suspend Dan Snyder?
Yeah.
And what I'm saying to that is, you know, just because Jeff Bezos, and again, we assume he might not be able to buy more than 40%. We think he would be able to buy 40%. We don't know if he would be able to buy more. If they're about to suspend Dan Snyder or whatever, and they approve Jeff Bezos, there's nothing to be said that Bezos can't ultimately get a bigger stake, depending on the NFL's involvement here, or operating control of the organization while Dan Snyder is suspended. And again, that's speculation. I don't know that to be true, but that is very much on the table.
Absolutely. And that's something that, you know, the league, and I mean, and that's again, kind of going back to this whole ordeal in the first place, the minority owners wanting Dan out or wanting out themselves if they can't get Dan out. You know, on the outside looking in, a lot of it's okay. You know, you can talk about the guilty or innocent till proven guilty and all that stuff that this country is built on. But again, you're talking about three very, very successful business people who have been doing this for a long time. They're not wanting out simply based on rumors. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel like this is a Schrodinger's cat situation. Like, we know there's a cat in the box. We just don't know what the cat looks like right now, but there's a cat in that stinking box. And once it opens up, there's going to be repercussions. Now, how severe those repercussions are going to be based on a lot of factors, and some of them aren't as savory as we would like them to be, granted, you know what I mean? But that's just kind of the truth of the situation. But you're 100% right. I wouldn't be surprised necessarily if there wasn't a situation where they told Dan, look, dude, like, if you don't want us to just completely cut you out of this situation, take whatever legal action we can as a league or have to do as other owners to completely put you out of this thing, you're going to have to make some concessions. And one of those concessions could be, like you said, a suspension for a season probably. And then it also could be a contractual agreement between Jeff and Dan to where Jeff now has operational control of the organization so that Dan can't then go to his family members and say, with our powers combined, we control Jeff, because now in the contract, you can't do that. You know what I mean? So
right. That
is something that could definitely happen. It's something that's definitely on the board, I would imagine. Because, I mean, if we're thinking about it, we're not billionaire businessmen. I like to think we're two smart individuals, but we're not billionaire businessmen. They are, so they know those loopholes and they know how to get there. And it's going to be interesting how it unfolds anyway. But I think bringing a guy like Jeff on board can only do good for the organization, whether Dan sticks around or not.
Yeah. One other quick thing that we should throw in there, a part of this filing on Monday included the representation company that's representing the three minority owners, 87 phone calls, 87 with former Washington team president Bruce Allen. And apparently, according to the transcripts, more than 22 hours total of conversation between Bruce Allen and MOAG, the company that is representing the three owners, including text and email messages that prove they were in cahoots with each other. So that's going to be a really interesting part of this to figure out if Bruce Allen is driving a lot of this negativity and negative reporting and negative accusations against Dan Snyder, and then how the NFL deals with that. That's going to be something to keep an eye on, because I don't think we had that level of detail with Bruce Allen.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's layers upon layers upon layers of this thing. And, you know, someday someone's going to write a book about it. It's going to be a very compelling read. There may be a 30 for 30 on it someday. Who knows? I don't know if, you know, networks like ESPN are going to want to get involved in a project like that. But there's so many things going on with this whole thing. You got to assume that eventually there will be a Netflix or something out there that fans can dive into if they really want to get into the weeds with it. I don't know, Chris, if there's going to be any prop bets for whether or not Dan Snyder is going to stick around or if Jeff Bezos is going to buy even a portion of the Washington football team. But I do know there are a lot of other prop bets out there. And where I go to find those prop bets is betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all sports action. Whether it's NBA, college basketball, hockey, baseball is coming around. I'm not a huge baseball guy, but I might get involved with just for some of these prop bets, some home run numbers and over-unders and all that stuff. Sounds like a lot of fun. But BetOnline even has me covered and has everybody covered for awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has all of us covered for all the new scores and odds we need, and it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Just use your computer to go to the website or use your mobile device to go to the website. Sign up today for a free account. Use a promo code Locked On when you make your first deposit, and you'll get a 50% welcome bonus from betonline.ag. Again, that's promo code Locked On for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, February is Black History Month, and the Locked On Podcast Network is honoring the challenges and success of Black men and women in sports with a new series called Locked On Presents More Than the Game. This week, Candace Cooper of Locked On Tar Heels and Eric Ayala of Locked On Women's Basketball discuss the opportunities and challenges that come with being a Black woman in sports. Subscribe to the Locked On Presents podcast feed on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts, like the Washington Football Team podcast.
Yeah, and Chris, we talked about Brandon Scherff earlier this week on our Monday episode, and he's going to become a topic of conversation even more moving forward, because the franchise tag deadline, the window to franchise tag players for National Football League teams starts on Tuesday, February 23rd, and it ends on March 9th. And then as we talked about yesterday, the teams then have until July 15th to enter into long-term deals or new contracts with those tag players if they can agree to. If they can't, until they do, that player will count against their salary cap, their working cap, for that franchise tag number. And when you look at a guy like Brandon Scherff, we kind of chronicled all the things and considerations that the Washington Football Team has taken into with him and whether or not they franchise tag him or if they can come to an agreement, which doesn't seem likely based off the information that's coming out. Offensive linemen in the 2021 season are estimated, right, projected, because we don't have a hard salary cap right now, so it's hard to tell. But the estimation is that an offensive lineman would be tagged at a value of about $13.602 million. But because Scherff has already been franchise tagged once, he would get that escalator similar to what Kirk Cousins got when he was going through his situation. And that would actually move his franchise tag value upwards of $18 million, right around there, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, depending on what considerations the NFL's put in place for the lower amount of revenue teams made. But given the traditional, right, I put that in quotes, the traditional 20% escalator from year one to year two using a back-to-back franchise tag, you're looking at about $18 million. How does that factor in, you think, for you personally, and how you feel about Brandon? Because you went pretty in-depth about how solid of a player he is, but also injury-prone.
Right. You know, and it's interesting, as you were kind of going through that, I think you're absolutely right. I did confirm with a source of mine and a friend of mine who is a longtime salary cap analyst, executive of, you know, and is currently an NFLPA agent, And he did confirm that it is 120% based off of last year's $15.03 million tag, which brings that number, you know, that you were just mentioning to just over 18 million, which, you know, is a healthy $3 million bump for Brandon Scherff. But if you look at it, and again, assuming the estimated number is right, which is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of say 13.6, 13.7 or whatever. I mean, that's a pretty stark difference, right? Between the two, between what most other offensive linemen would get on the franchise tag and what Scherff would get. So I really think both sides are going to try and do everything they can to avoid playing this season out on the tag and maybe even try and avoid and wait for the very last minute to give him the tag, meaning March 9th is the deadline. Maybe they wait, David, all the way up until that very day to see where they're at. And that's probably what I would do, to be honest with you, because you don't want Brandon Scherff to count more than $18 million under the cap. Yet you have to balance that by the long-term balance of the fully guaranteed money and the structure of the contract too. So like, you can't be short-sighted and just say, oh, okay, we want a cap number of 9 million this year, 10 million this year, because we don't want to pay it 18 million, but then cost yourself big time on the back end. So that's going to be the tricky balance that Washington is going to have to figure out here about Brandon Scherff. And I know I'm not as high on him as others. That's okay. It's injury, and I think it's a lack of consistent dominance compared to others, like Kevin Zeitler and all that. Well, not Kevin Zeitler, Zach Martin, I should say, and even Brandon Brooks when he was healthy. And Kevin Zeitler's good. I would just say this, that Scherff deserves to get paid. The problem is he's going to have to work with the Washington football team. If he expects top of the line market for all parts of this deal, that's just not going to work for me. But right. I could be wrong on that.
No, I mean, I agree with you to a certain extent, especially. And I mean, I've gone through this almost every year on the Locked On Bucks podcast when talking about Donovan Smith, because a lot of people have been unhappy with Donovan's performance. It's a different situation, whereas Donovan's been extremely healthy but very inconsistent playing on the field, and Brandon has been very, very good, solid to above average on the field, but has been very inconsistent on when he's on the field due to those injuries. Mm-hmm. So somewhat similar but a lot different at the same time. And the question that we always come up against with Donovan Smith is, who's better? Who are you going to replace him with? And that's kind of the situation that Washington is in with Brandon Scherff. Who are they going to replace him with if they don't bring him back? So that kind of works against them. But then at the same time, I think the biggest hurdle they're going to have to clear, Chris, and you're kind of hitting on it as you go through this, is what type of precautions is the team going to get against his health, and what type of guarantees is he going to get regardless of his health? That's going to be, you know, how much money do I get as Brandon no matter what happens? But then as a team, how much cap relief do we get? You know, if it's 18 million, but there are triggers in there, and, you know, maybe 5 million of those triggers rely on you not only playing, you know, 13 or more games, but then also being present for the playoffs and et cetera, et cetera. That money might dwindle down by the end of the season. You may actually only carry over a little bit of that cap hit. But at least for Brandon's sake, even if that happens, you're getting a solid amount of money up front so that you're taken care of. That's the balance that they're going to have to strike in this whole thing. And that's, I think, where the complication is going to come in.
It is very tricky indeed. Before we take our second and last time out, just wanted to get your quick feedback on something Peter King wrote in Football Morning in America, part of Pro Football Talk and NBCSports.com. He said that basically in order to get a crack at Deshaun Watson, and he did a team by team breakdown and some mock proposals, if you will. And I assume, you know, some of that was speculation. Some of that was probably conversations he's had with people. He said it might take Washington football to offer Chase Young plus another young player and 3 or 4 very high draft picks to make a run for Deshaun Watson. Now, we haven't been doing the show for long, but my sense is, call me crazy, that you would probably call that an absurd proposal.
Yeah, that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you're giving up way too much of your franchise for one player. And again, quarterback is the most important player on the field. Got it. Deshaun Watson is a really good quarterback, potential franchise leading quarterback. He did a lot of good things last season without a lot of weapons around him, and I applaud him for doing so. I understand why he wants to leave the franchise he's with, but at the same time, the franchise he joins, you can't give up that much of your future. We were talking off air. I saw a proposed PFF trade with the Denver Broncos. that talked about giving up Bradley Chubb, who is a lesser considered, you know, edge rusher than a guy like Chase Young is, granted. But then also they give up Chubb, and they also give up two first-round draft picks in 2021, 2022, and then two second-round draft picks in 2021, 2022. So the difference between Chase Young and Chubb, you're probably going to save, what, one of those seconds? So you're giving up two consecutive first-round picks and a second and Chase Young. So you're basically giving up a second overall pick and two future first and a second for Deshaun Watson. He's great, but he's not going to make up the production you're going to lose from giving up all of that draft capital. You're going to torpedo your franchise just to bring him in, and then you're going to end up having to pay him another king's ransom to keep him on the team by the time you rebuild your team around him. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. You can't never say never, especially in the NFL. I am going to be, if the Houston Texans get what everybody is speculating they're going to get for Deshaun Watson, I'm going to be really sad for the fan base of that team, because I think it's going to set them back tremendously for just one player.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We can agree on this as well, that there's one spot to go, guys. If you need your car or truck repaired and you don't want to spend the big money that the factory dealerships are going to cost, and that's rockauto.com. Whether you're a foreign or domestic owner, old or new, whatever model or make that you have, rockauto.com is the place to go for the best auto part shopping experience. No need to go to those big auto part superstores where they've got to pay all that overhead to keep the place running and to keep the lights on. And they're just going to pass those extra charges on to you, or they're going to charge their buddies less because they buy in bulk or volume. Nope, rockauto.com is going to send you and charge you the same prices that they're going to charge everybody, and they're not going to take advantage of you. So again, when you go to rockauto.com to search for all the parts for your car or truck, again, foreign or domestic, new or old, major or minor, make sure you go to rockauto.com and write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need at rockauto.com.
Wrapping up this Tuesday episode of the Locked On Washington Football Team, David Harrison and Chris Russell coming at you. Find me on Twitter at dharrison82. Find Chris at russellmania621. When you're done listening to today's episode, check out the Peacock and Williamson Show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network slate of podcasts. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host Locked On Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight on every team and move from the league. Get your picks, previews, and much, much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
All right, it's time for our free agent focus. And David, as we make our way down the list, we're going to go in depth with somebody that you know very well from your time covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the Locked On Bucs podcast. And everything else that you do, and that's Levante David. We touched on him right after the Super Bowl win when we first got together here on the Locked On Washington Football Team podcast as a possible fit for the Washington Football Team. They need a lot of help at linebacker. He's 31. He's going to cost some money. He's still a very productive linebacker. The question for me to you is, how does he fit here in Washington, where they have Bostic under contract for one more year? They have Cole Holcomb, who they like. Kevin Pierre-Lewis is a free agent who may or may not return. They have young guys like Kalik Hudson. They may move Landon Collins down. How do you see potentially Levante David fitting here in Washington?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the big question. From a leadership standpoint, a locker room guy on the field at practice and even in the game communicating and helping to make sure the younger guys or maybe just the guys that don't have as much skill or awareness as he does, he's a home run. Like, no matter how much, you know, if you end up making him the highest paid linebacker in the game, you're going to get money's value from that. Where the question has always been surrounding Levante David, and one of the reasons he's so criminally underrated and underappreciated from a league-wide standpoint, is the stat box. And it's not necessarily tackles. I mean, you go down his career tackles, he's got 100-plus tackles in every single season he's been playing except for one. But then you look at his sack numbers, right? His career high in sacks was 7, and that came in 2013, which is his only first-team All-Pro berth in his entire career. But then you go down the list, his second-best season – was 3 years later in 2016, where he had five sacks, and he hasn't had another five sack season since. This season, he had 1.5. Devin White in that Buccaneers 3-4 base is really the off-ball linebacker they use to blitz more. Levante basically stays. He's the contained man. He's the guy that forces running backs back inside towards the rest of the defense. He makes the smart play, right, while Devin White goes out there and makes the flashy play. And those things aren't as sexy on a nation. You know, they don't make Good Morning Football episodes or ESPN, you know, top 10 plays and all that stuff, if they even still do that. I don't know. But it's the things that Levante does that make the team around him better, that make him so valuable. And it's the things that they don't ask him to do, like, you know, blitz, you know, 20 times a game or whatever. And that's hyperbole a little bit. But it's the lack of those things that make him so much, such an underrated player. So, I mean, where would he fit with Washington? The question is whether or not they would look at him as their off-ball linebacker, inside linebacker in a 4-3 front. Because when the Buccaneers played a 4-3, he was a weak side linebacker. He was not playing in the middle. He wasn't playing in that role. He was a weak side guy. If they moved him to weak side, you know he knows how to do it. You know he knows what he's doing, and he's one of the best to do it in the game. If they have him quarterbacking the defense there, you can do that from a mental standpoint. My concern, especially as he gets more into his 30s, is does he have the range he needs to have to be the standalone inside linebacker for a team, a middle linebacker for a team that runs a 4-3 base? That's the only place I really have a question for this. So I guess that's really my concern. If it were me, I would be looking to bring him back in as a weak side linebacker. Honestly, I feel like Levante, even if he leaves Tampa, is looking to stay inside, probably looking to go play in a 3-4.
You know, he could play weak side here, right? I mean, in that 4-3, because you have John Bostic under contract for one more year. Mm-hmm. Right now you have Cole Holcomb. And again, you don't have Kevin Pierre-Louis under contract. So, I mean, theoretically, there is a need for him here. Yeah. And certainly, again, the leadership and the character. The question for me is less about fit here. It's about how much money you want to sink into, right, you know, again, a guy who's 31 years old. And will he hold up in coverage if you need to drop him out, run him down seams with tight ends and walk him down on the line of scrimmage against a receiver or just in the flat against or on circle routes or wheel routes against, you know, running backs? Mm-hmm. Like, that to me, that's more the concern of any time you're going to pay somebody that's on the plus side of 30. Yeah. What it's going to take to get Levante David to leave Tampa to come to a kind of a foreign spot. Is that fair?
No, that's absolutely fair. And I would say that yes to all the above. Yes, he can still do that. He can cover the tight ends, whether they're bigger. He can still get enough body on them to cause them problems. And if they do make the catch, you saw in the Super Bowl against Travis Kelce, if they make the catch, he's strong enough and good enough that he can get them down without, you know, without them causing a whole lot of damage to your team. As far as running backs are concerned, when you saw the Buccaneers defense get hit for wheel routes or running backs coming out of the backfield, it wasn't Levante David getting burned. Honestly, most often it was Devin White. And I kind of chalk that up to a little bit of youth and over aggression and trying to close on his first read. That's what teams saw. That's why kind of as you got into the later part of the season in the playoffs, you really saw Devin White's pass coverage responsibilities drop off a little bit. He became much more of a pass rusher than anything else, while Levante kind of stayed back and was that pass protecting linebacker there from the off-ball position. So whether you move him into the weak side or you keep him in the middle there, he has the ability to do so. My only question, if you do put him in the middle, would be the range, like I said before. My thing with Levante, with all the effort that he's put into that Tampa Bay Buccaneers organization and the rosters that he's played on and the disappointment and the defeat that he's experienced there to make it to the top now, if he leaves Tampa, and I'm not saying he's a greedy guy, but if he leaves Tampa, I can't believe it's for anything other than money. Like, he understands this is probably his last chance at a big contract. So he's going to go set up that generational wealth that so many guys are looking to establish in their families. And he's going to take the biggest paycheck he can find. He's going to go play. And if that's the case, 4-3 or 3-4 doesn't matter. He's just going to go out there and say, okay, coach, your team paid me the most, so I'm here. What do you want me to do? And the thing that you can guarantee with Levante is he's not one of those guys that's going to get a huge payday and come in and ride off that paycheck. He's going to come in, whether it's Washington, Tampa, anybody, and he's going to grind for every single penny that he's getting paid. So at least from a fan base standpoint, you can at least appreciate the fact that you know you have a guy that's not going to come in overpaid and not work to get the job done. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it fits is going to depend a lot on what Washington asks him to do. Again, weak side, I'd be more comfortable with it. I'd be a lot happier with it. You put him in the middle there by himself, having to cover that much real estate in a 4-3 base defense. I just worry about that. I'm a 3-4 guy anyway. You know what I mean?
Right.
To be honest with you. But I would be a little concerned with Levante in that situation just because he's in his 30s. He's just not as rangy as he used to be.
Yeah, and again, I think John Bostic can at least under contract for one more year, right, at least can be solid to fairly, yes, okay in the middle. And clearly, I think their focus will be on drafting somebody that can be, yep, their Luke Kuechly type, for lack of a better term.
Exactly.
And somebody that...
And that's where I would go if I were them. If I brought in Levante David, I'd be looking to play him weak side, use a combination of Holcomb and Bostic like you're talking about. Right. Draft a guy, maybe round one even, maybe round, yep, two. Off-ball linebackers aren't very sexy, but draft a guy, develop him to eventually take their place.
But it is Twitter Tuesday, and we asked the question, how would you feel about Levante David coming to the Washington football team? And that fit, Stephen Loesch says, I would be interested, but probably not signing him. He's most likely looking to become the highest paid linebacker in the league. I don't think I would be willing to go that high. He'd be a great addition, but I would allow another team to pay him. And our buddy Strick says, one of the best, but expensive and like 32. I'd honestly look to a less expensive option and even better, the draft. No doubt about it, cost is going to be a major, major factor. All right, good breakdown of Levante David. Obviously, tapping into David's skills and his experience with Levante David on the Locked On Bucks podcast and also at Bucks Nation, part of SBNation.com. That's going to do it for us. Thanks to our sponsors today. It is rockauto.com and also betonline.ag. We covered you from start to finish, and we still didn't get to everything that we ultimately wanted. Another free agent focus on the next episode and much, much more. You never know what's going to happen with the Washington football team. For David Harrison, I'm Chris Russell. Thanks for being with us right here on the Locked On Washington Football Team podcast.